Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Crime and Investigations, I Am a Killer is a brand new 10-part true crime documentary series produced in partnership with Netflix by an excellent production team including me, Danny Tipping.
And me, Tom Adams. Each episode tells the story of a prisoner convicted of capital murder and sentenced to death.
In this podcast, we'll be going into the making of each episode, revealing what it was like to produce this incredible series.
My name is Miguel Angel Martinez. I was convicted of capital murder, and I was sentenced to death. It's difficult for me to go back and try to quantify how I felt or what I was thinking. It just seemed like watching something on the screen.
Episode 4, Sympathy for the Devil, is the story of Miguel Martinez, a young man involved in what's essentially a robbery and a murder.
Yes, Sympathy for the Devil, because when the murders he was involved with took place, upside down crosses that were in the building were put upside down, and the people who investigated the murders felt that there was some kind of, very possibly some kind of satanic ritual going on.
Miguel is a very thoughtful and charismatic guy.
Very intense, yeah. Actually. Very intense is what I got from his interviews. And incredibly thoughtful. And actually, I think he says it in the second interview a few times, that he thought long and hard about that first interview and the questions posed. And quite fairly, I think, had difficulty with the idea of people coming in and asking really big questions of him and being able to you know, give an answer that works in a one-hour program. And, you know, I think he could have just talked and talked and still not felt that he got his point across. Yeah, he was a really intense, thoughtful character.
Now, what I'm about to tell you, I stopped myself from telling anybody because of parole and what are they going to think about me? The warp in my mind happened when I was 8 years old. At 8 years old, I became convinced that I was the son of a devil.
Miguel Martinez, again, was a young man at the time these crimes took place, you know, with the other party, but was tried as an adult, where his partner was not, who is relieved, received a life sentence, and Miguel received the death penalty, you know, and has spent the best part of his adult life now in prison, contemplating the crimes. And again, he's extremely remorseful and talks very openly about his regret, and whether or not that elicits sympathy or empathy from the audience, I don't know, but it certainly, it, you know, you question what you thought you perhaps understood, you know, which is on paper fairly cut and dry case. Two young guys break in to a house, murder the occupants, and are tried and convicted for that crime. But there's a lot more to it than that. And I think, you know, you really need to watch the film and to understand the levels and the complexities.
He told me to give him the axe. He walked back down the hallway into the back room. I didn't see what he did. When he came back, he told me there was a guy back there, and that Satan wanted their soul.
The process took almost a year, really, to get to pool of people we wanted to film with.
I mean, Jess, our researcher, ended up writing something like 1,000 plus letters.
I think we got responses to 300, didn't we? But
yeah,
I mean,
but then continuing to write to and it had to be a prolonged process because it was 2 weeks for the letters to get there. The letters may or may not make it through the prison postal system. Some were just, you know, some never got to where they were intended. And equally, the letters back, some of them just we never got. And occasionally, letters crossed mid-Atlantic. And in a TV production world where you're used to instant emails and telephone calls and the like, it was going back 20 years. It was extraordinary, really.
And of course, I think the key point to make here is that this was our only form of communication with our prospective interviewees. We hadn't met or discussed anything with these guys until the day we turned up. We wrote thousands of letters and received hundreds of replies. And some of them were interested in our proposal, but were flatly refusing. Some of them were keen to use the opportunity of interviewing film crew to protest their innocence, and that's not what the series is about. You'll see when you watch the series that all 10 of our contributors accept the fact they've committed a crime and have at least partly come to terms with the punishment they've received. And I think that was a kind of key criteria, so that not everybody we wrote to obviously wanted to be involved, not everybody responded. And it did take a good year to get, 10 really strong contributors who we thought would contribute to 10 great films.
I mean, we knew we were making 10 shows, but we ended up interviewing 14 inmates on death row or people who had been on death row, simply because we didn't know whether their stories were held up, whether they were engaging and whether they were interested in talking, actually. And it was a difficult choice to choose the 10 from the 14, but it was also a way of, in case people just decided not to cooperate when we got there and we had no way of knowing whether they would or they wouldn't, we just had to turn up and roll the camera and see. It was a way of anticipating a couple of people just dropping out. In fact, nobody did. And I'd say everybody was keen to be involved. Everybody was keen to talk, actually, to tell their story. And that was something that really came through when we started getting the rushes back. It was how these characters, how these people wanted to talk and wanted to tell their story. Nobody had perhaps listened to them, or they'd only been able to tell their story to within very tight confines of a court hearing or whatever it might be. And actually, I think they felt that now I can say my piece.
Yeah, it's not an opportunity they get offered every day. And also, it's not a right. It's not their right to talk to any film or media team that turns up. And a couple of people actually that were on our longer list had their privileges revoked. We never found out why, but they weren't allowed then to contribute. So the pool narrowed over time. These guys, I think, were grateful for the opportunity, but also had to, I think, earn the privilege to be able to talk to our team. And they were another contributing factor to that, which we haven't mentioned, actually, that the prison authorities were happier to grant us access in the initial stages because we were a British film crew. And I think they felt we would have a more unbiased, fairer journalistic approach, perhaps, because we were British. That's no casting the aspersions.
Possibly less of an agenda. I don't know. Yeah but I think that counted, and I also think that counted within the interviews. I think there was a distance that allowed them to talk. I don't know. Without having an American on the team, it's hard to know.
I have a life sentence. Milo has no sentence. My perspective is, and has been, trying to equate what he is responsible for with what I am responsible for, trying to bring into alignment how he was treated and how I was treated, trying to find some equality.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Miguel Martinez, I've read his letters, and again, he communicates very openly and initially welcomes the opportunity to tell his side of the story. Again, you know, it's another tragic tale of a guy, perhaps on the, you know, from the wrong side of the tracks, gets involved in drugs and petty crime, and things spiral out of control from there. And he spent the rest of his life paying for that. You know,
what interests me about him is the way he never quite reveals his story. It's all in there, but he keeps a lid on it. And I mean, it's heartbreaking, really. Quite what went on, we don't know. Quite what the ins and outs of the events that night, we don't know. Again, we get lots of different perspectives on it. But there's so much unsaid in his final interview, and his line about still having the anchor around his neck, it's just that the chain is a little bit longer, I think is it's heartbreaking.
And I think there's it's evident, you know, in this film as much as any of them, that they, you know, that time in prison where they have to, you know, these guys have had to live with their crimes. Again, he doesn't deny his involvement in any way, shape or form. You know, is to understand that and to hear that firsthand just offers you the tiniest amount of understanding of what these guys may have gone through. Again, whether that elicits any kind of sympathy or empathy, I don't know, but it's
But again, the, you know, the flip side of that is there are three people dead. So It's difficult talking about these because the characters we have got to know, however well we know them, are the people who were involved in the crime, and who we don't know are the victims. And in all of these, there are victims, and there are tragic stories that these are lives that are lost. And on the one hand, you're trying to understand this character. On the other hand, you know, people have been murdered.
We'd love to hear what you think of the series. Comment on Facebook or Twitter with hashtag IAmAKiller. And don't forget to rate us and subscribe to this podcast series.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
The I'm a Killer podcast is hosted by Tom Adams and Danny Tipping and is produced by Sam Pearson, Steph Nardilli and Matt Talent, with editing by Susanna Lawrence.
What makes a stalker tick? I'm Ruchira Sharma, inviting you to delve into Anatomy of a Stalker, an original crime and investigation podcast.
That police officer's partner drove to my house to warn me that this man would kill me.
She'd look in the rearview mirror, out from the back seat would up pop the ex-husband.
Don't miss Anatomy of a Stalker. Listen and follow wherever you get your podcasts. The hunt begins now.